Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1371, Korea on Our Minds, Part 4. This is being recorded on February 1st of the year 2025. Let me begin by reminding you that the new 64-gigabyte flash drive will be ready presently. It is going to include this series I'm doing on Korea on Our Minds. Please be patient. This will be a new 64 GB flash drive. The old 32 gigabyte flash drive is just too small for all of the information that has been compiled. And I get no work whatsoever from, from that whatsoever. It's my entire lifetime's work. There also, by the way, is a mini library of old anti-fascist books on it. I was speaking with a veteran and very skilled researcher, and he was talking about a book about I.G. Farben written in 1942 that I have been discussing on my Patreon platform, and he mentioned that he had come across a very good book about I.G. Farben called The Devil's Chemists by Josiah Thompson. That book is one of the books available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website, and it will be on the flash drive. So please, please do get that flash drive. Sadly, everything I have been speaking about is coming to fruition, and we have, I think, a responsibility to future generations to preserve the historical record for those who come after us. Now, speaking of preserving the historical record, this is Korea on Our Minds, Part 4. Part 1 consisted largely of a recap of information presented in For the Record 1141, Deep Politics, and The Death of Park Won-soon, Part 2. And we were speaking about the Japanese colonization of Korea, its brutalization of Korea, and how Japan looted Korea over a period of centuries. We also spoke about how China had historically been a protector of Korea, and this was long before the U.S. existed. This was hundreds of years ago. And the profound Japanese influence on Korea was set in stone, really, while World War II was still going on. In some of our conversations with the brilliant Monty, he will be joining us presently. Some issues have come up. Again, he's a disabled vet. And when he returns to our airways, I'll fill you in, or let him fill you in on some of what has been going on. But in our conversations with Monty, we spoke about how the Japanese were heavily involved with Operation Sunrise, and even before the guns fell silent in Asia, things were being worked out for the inclusion of the Japanese national security establishment into our own, and the same interests were put right back in power in Japan as had ruled during its fascist and imperial period. We've spoken about that, by the way, in many, many shows. And the book Gold Warriors, excerpted at length in 1141, speaks about one of the fundaments of the U.S.-Japanese relationship and the post World War II economic landscape, and that is the consummate amount of gold that was, and other forms of wealth that were secreted by Japan around Asia, largely in the Philippines, but not exclusively. In the Philippines alone, Operation Golden Lily resulted in $100 billion worth of gold and wealth secreted, and it one Japanese official commented it would take 100 years to bring it out. And that was when gold was valued at $35 an ounce, which it was at the end of World War II. Now it's up, you know, I don't know, $2,000 an ounce, so it's an unimaginable amount of wealth. And that is one of the cornerstones, one of the foundational elements of not only the post-World War II economic landscape, but of the U.S.-Japanese relationship. It has been used along with the black gold that was secreted away by the Third Reich, by the U.S. and the other Western so-called democracies for covert operations in the Cold War period and subsequently. In, for the record, 1169, we spoke about the profound Japanese influence on right-wing Korea in the post-World War II period. This began under Syngman Rhee in the pre-Korean War period and continued right on up to the present. We spoke about Mr. Tsujima, a Japanese war criminal who was heavily involved, along with Roichi Sasakawa and Kobayama Yoshio, in helping to perpetuate the Japanese influence in Korea. And Prime Minister Nobusuke Kishi, who actually signed the declaration of war, Japan's declaration of war against the U.S. And his grandson, by the way, is Abe Shinzo, who became Prime Minister of Japan and was recently assassinated, allegedly, because of his stewardship of the Unification Church, which, although nominally Korean, appears to be a projection of the Japanese patriotic and ultranationalist societies that brought fascism to Japan around the world and through the decades. In For the Record 1169, we also spoke about the profound influence of the Manchurians. Those were Koreans who had served the Japanese in Manchukuo, the Japanese puppet colony of Manchuria. And by the way, Nobusuke Kishi got his start in Manchuria. Perhaps one of the most famous of the Manchurians, or most influential, was Park Chung-hee, who spoke Japanese so fluently. He got his start, like so many of them did, in the Japanese army in World War II. He spoke Japanese so fluently that other Japanese, that Japanese diplomats, felt that his speech was indistinguishable from that of native speakers. The corporate structure of South Korea is grouped around the chaebol, C-H-A-E-B-O-L. I may be mispronouncing that. Those two, including Samsung and Hyundai, have their genesis in the Japanese colonization of Korea, which was very, very brutal. And it has continued, the Japanese influence in Korea has continued apace. And we spoke about that. And we also spoke about the attempts by South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol to establish martial law in Korea. We will be downloading a major article about that. One of the things that I want to note about what we're going to speak about concerns President Yoon Suk-yeol's tarring of all of his political opponents as North Korean collaborators. That was a common Japanese tactic during the Japanese colonization of Korea. Any nationalist who opposed the Japanese was called a communist. And that rhetorical device was then worked seamlessly into the post-World War II period, where Syngman Rhee's government in post-World War II South Korea was basically a cat's paw for the continued Japanese imperial structure, particularly the police and the military, also the corporations or chaebol as well. And the tactic of tarring all opponents as communists or North Korean dupes or whatever is something that President Yoon Suk-yeol has been doing. Now, in the article that we are going to read, we will go into the gory details, the terrifying details. Fortunately, no blood was shed in the martial law attempts, but the details are truly chilling. And among the things that appears to have been in the offing, waiting in the wings, were a series of provocations, including quite possibly the use of a false flag operation where operatives wearing North Korean military uniforms were going to attack not only American staff installations, but American troops as well, hoping to provoke an American attack upon North Korea. Note that Yoon Suk-yeol came to power after Park Won-soon allegedly committed suicide. I don't believe he actually committed suicide. He, by the way, Park Won-soon, had filed a lawsuit against the Shin Shan-ji cult, which has both doctrinal and operational overlap with the Unification Church, it appears to have been the vehicle for bringing COVID into Seoul, South Korea, and the rest of that country, and it also had a branch in Wuhan, China, and I wonder if that was one of the vectors for bringing COVID into Wuhan as well. So, note the chilling possibility that one of the things that President Yoon was trying to do was to provoke a restart of the Korean War. However, North Korea now is a nuclear power, and they have treaties with both China and Russia. It would result in World War III. And I'm afraid that powder keg is still, the fuse to that power keg is still very much burning. Also, I want to call attention to the very low popularity of Yoon Suk-yeol's government. He was polling about 17% popularity. He proposed a 120-hour work week with no overtime pay. The unions were not exactly thrilled with that. He attacked the unions. And I also particularly want to call your attention to the similarities between Yoon Suk-yeol and Donald Trump's administration, too, where Yoon Suk-yeol's, quote, conservative, unquote, I would classify them as fascist. Supporters are talking about stop the steal, and Yoon Suk-yeol was saying that the recent legislative elections, which saw his swept from power and the opposition gaining control, huge control over the national legislature, he said those were false elections, they were rigged, etc. And the stop the steal meme has become a major feature of South Korean politics as well. Bear in mind that now in the U.S., we have a president who during the COVID, the overt phase of the COVID pandemic, it is still going on, but he said that, well, if you get infected, just ingest a little disinfectant and you'll be good to go. Hell's bells, an 8-year-old knows better than that, and yet that's what we have for a president. So note the similarities between Yoon Suk-yeol in Korea, I'm going to call him President Yoon, and Donald Trump, and the similarities between what Yoon Suk-yeol's supporters are doing and what Donald Trump's supporters are doing. And also notice how, in a very real way, Yoon Suk-yeol is perpetuating the Japanese spawn influence in South Korea. And one of the reasons for the relative lack of punitive measures taken against him. He has been indicted in South Korea. It remains to be seen if he's convicted. He may be able to return to power. But he, along with Japan and the other anti-China coalition, are seen as part of the AUKUS alignment. People have been talking about Tulsi Gabbard and how wonderful she is. There was a Wall Street Journal article talking about her membership in the Hare Krishna cult or the Science of Identity Foundation, a brutal offshoot of that. And in addition to that, she is Narendra Modi's point person in the U.S. Narendra Modi's BJP is a political cat's paw for the RSS, a Hindutva fascist organization that was modeled after Mussolini's black shirts, and that was the organization that engineered the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi. So that's what Tulsi Gabbard is doing. She's not only a mind control job, not only a member of mind control cult, but she is the point person for Narendra Modi. So her anti-China manifestations or anti-China manifestations of Modi and the RSS, those figure into Tulsi Gabbard. So again, do note that one of the reasons we haven't heard very much about what has been taking place in Korea, not only is the looming factor of the enormous wealth accumulated under the Golden Lily program, one of the foundations of the post-World War II economy, front and center, although we don't hear about it, but also, again, South Korea's position as part of the anti-China alliance. Well, with that characteristically long-winded Dave Emery introduction, we're going to begin this program by reading a very long and important article from Counterpunch magazine from January 3rd of 2025. This was authored by Gregory Ehlich, E-L-I-C-H, who also is one of the co-editors of the introduction to a 1952 book by I.F. Stone called The Hidden History of the Korean War. We accessed that briefly in For the Record 1170, and we're going to come back to it again in probably not in this show, but in our next program, maybe the program after that. This article is called How Yoon Planned to Set South Korea on the Path to Military Dictatorship by Gregory Ehrlich, E-L-I-C-H, from Counterpunch Magazine from January 3rd of 2025. Since South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's failed attempt to impose martial law on December 3rd, a steady stream of revelations has emerged from reporters and investigators, painting an increasingly disturbing picture of events. Plans drawn up by Yoon's co-conspirators included a shocking level of brutality and the promise of repression on a mass scale. His administration even made efforts to provoke a conflict with North Korea to bolster the case for martial rule. Although many Western reports framed the end of martial law as a triumph for democracy, South Korea is not out of danger yet. The extreme right actively opposes Yoon's impeachment, and it remains to be seen if the Constitutional Court will confirm Yoon's impeachment. He has been indicted, but it remains to be seen whether he gets convicted. This, again, this article was written on January 3rd. And the next section of the article is called Background to Martial Law. Although the martial law declaration shocked many, signs of Yoon's authoritarian nature were apparent long before. There was his propensity for making blanket condemnations of critics as, quote, anti-state forces, unquote, in essence, conflating opposition to his right-wing policies with treason. Again, note the comparison to Donald Trump, and note how he has been continuing a term of the commie brush tactic that dates back to the Japanese occupation of Korea prior to and during World War II. One more time. There was his propensity for making blanket condemnations of critics as anti-state forces, unquote, in essence, conflating opposition to his right-wing policies with treason. That attitude was often openly expressed, as in a speech Yoon delivered on National Liberation Day in 2023, branding the liberal and progressive political opposition as, quote, anti-state forces that blindly follow communist totalitarianism, distort public opinion, and disrupt the society through manipulative propaganda, unquote. In Yoon's Manichaean viewpoint, pitted against his far-right policies, was a sizable segment of Korean society that lacked legitimacy. Quote, the forces of communist totalitarianism, unquote, he continued in delusional mode, again quoting, have always disguised themselves as democracy activists, human rights advocates, or progressive activists while engaging in despicable and unethical tactics and false propaganda. We must never succumb to the forces of communist totalitarianism, unquote. Yoon's repressive tendencies often came to the fore more directly. Such was the case on May 31, 2023, when police attacked a union rally and then searched a construction union headquarters several days later, seizing electronic equipment and documents. In another example, a year ago, National Intelligence Service, or MIS, agents, backed by more than 1,000 riot police, raided the headquarters of the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, or KCPU, and 14 other union offices and residences. Based on the trumped-up charge that union officials were taking orders from North Korea, the raid netted three unionists who were arrested and later convicted to multi-year prison sentences. It is worth recalling that the MIS has a history of fabricating evidence against activists, most famously in its manufactured, quote, evidence, unquote, that led to the forcible dissolution of the Unified Progressive Party 10 years ago. Political organizations also experienced repression, and last August, that would be for 2024, raided the office of the People's Democratic Party and its members' residences, and two leaders of Korea Solidarity were sentenced to prison terms for violating the National Security Act, which has often been used as a weapon over the years to smother dissent. Yoon has faced rising labor unrest in response to his anti-labor policies. His response has been to implement a repressive policy against the union movement characterized by a pattern of harassment. One of Yoon's primary motivations for a military takeover was to deal a fatal blow to the union movement. He often ranted about the Korean Federation of Trade Unions, a particularly passionate object of his hatred. At Yoon's residence in, August, he discussed adopting emergency measures and specified what that meant for the KCPU, again, the Korean Federation of Trade Unions. Quote, "We have to take action against these people," unquote. And again, he was touting them as North Korean or communist dupes, a tactic that goes back to the Japanese occupation of Korea. Continuing, Yoon obsessed over the April 10th legislative election in South Korea, which handed a landslide victory to the opposition, widely seen as a rebuke to him personally and his policies. Social media was flooded with inaccurate claims of electoral fraud by his supporters. That is to say, the flooding was done by his supporters. One more time. Social media was flooded with inaccurate claims of electoral fraud by his supporters. Does that remind you of anyone? Continuing. No doubt, Yoon found such claims a more acceptable explanation of electoral disaster than to look within himself as the cause. Yoon began to cultivate relationships with far-right YouTubers who fed his delusion, firing his resentment and anger, and the subject formed another main factor motivating his plan for a military takeover. Again, does this remind you of anyone? Repeat me this last sentence. Yoon began to cultivate relationships with far-right YouTubers who fed his delusion, firing his resentment and anger, and the subject formed another main factor motivating his plan for a military takeover. The next section, planning for military dictatorship. Martial law had a long gestation, the origin of which predated the April 10th election. Yoon drove the process at every step, with the earliest documented case of its expression in December of 2023, when he remarked to military officials, quote, "The only way to solve difficult problems is through emergency measures," unquote. Serious planning got underway in 5-party meetings led by Yoon that took place between June and November, and which were attended by his key co-conspirators. Representing the military were General Lee Jin-woo, commander of the Capital Defense Command, and Special Warfare Commander Kwak Jong-jun. Others included Kim Yong-hyun, who held the position of chief of the Presidential Security Service at the time of the initial meeting, and later on became defense minister. By the way, I'm probably butchering many of these Korean names. Yoon met with Yeo and Kim at least 10 times to plan the operation, ending in November when they conducted a martial law simulation. At first, things did not go as smoothly as Yoon would have liked. According to an inside military source, quote, "The president's commitment to martial law has always been firm," unquote, but Kim Yong-hyun was initially not very actively involved. By March of 2024, though, Kim, quote, "had become a staunch believer in martial law, while on the other hand, National Intelligence Service Director Cho Tae-yong and then Defense Minister Shin Won-sik opened consistently opposed it." One more time. By March of 2024, though, Kim, quote, "had become a staunch believer in martial law, while on the other hand, National Intelligence Service Director Cho Tae-yong and then Defense Minister Shin Won-sik consistently opposed it," unquote. At dinner one evening that month, Yoon, livid over his political frustrations, blurted out, quote, "We will have to impose martial law soon," unquote. Taken aback, Shin and Cho tried to dissuade Yoon without success. Emotions ran high, and after dinner, Kim and Yeo joined Shin at his home where they clashed over Yoon's comment. Shin, again, S-H-I-N, adamantly opposed martial law, and he and Kim soon became embroiled in a heated argument, shouting at each other until late into the night. Something had to be done about Shin, who, although a hawk, do not support Yoon's overturning of the constitutional order. One more time. Something had to be done about Shin, who, although a hawk, did not support Yoon's overturning of the constitutional order. A man with his attitude toward martial law would not do. On August 12th, Yoon nominated the most supportive Kim Jong-hyun as his new Minister of National Defense, which took effect in September, again, September 2024. A firm believer in martial law was needed in his position of authority over the military. A firm believer in martial law was needed in this position of authority over the military, and Kim was that man. In appointing Kim, Yoon shunted Shin to another position where he would not get in the way. Plans had progressed in September to the stage where elite agents from the Headquarters Intelligence Detachment, or HID, began training to carry out operations under martial law. The HID is a special warfare unit that, in the event of war, has as its mission infiltration into North Korea to assassinate officials and commit acts of sabotage. Why this particular skill set was considered suitable against a domestic civilian population is indicative of Yoon's attitude toward the democratic opposition. One more time. The HID, again, Headquarters Intelligence Detachment, the HID is a special warfare unit that in the event of war has as its mission infiltration into North Korea to assassinate officials and commit acts of sabotage. Why this particular skill set was considered suitable against a domestic civilian population is indicative of Yoon's attitude toward democratic opposition. HID agents assigned to martial law operations were chosen for their proficiency in hand-to-hand combat. On the day Yoon declared martial law, five of the HID agents deployed to Pangyo on the outskirts of Seoul, and the remaining 35 were assigned to various locations inside the capital city. By November, the Defense Counterintelligence Command drafted high-level plans for martial law. Ro Sang-won, again, very important figure, Ro Sang-won, capital R-O-H, last name capital S-A-N-G hyphen W-O-N, and we will refer to him as Ro from now on. Ro Sang-won, a former intelligence commander, widely regarded as the architect of Yoon's martial law insurrection, devised implementation plans. Ro Sang-won, a former intelligence commander widely regarded as the architect of Yoon's martial law insurrection, devised implementation plans. Ro brought an unsavory background to the project beyond his intelligence experience. 6 years ago, he was dishonorably discharged from the service after being sentenced to 18 months in prison for sexual assault. Despite his civilian status, Ro was a key collaborator, apparently due to his intelligence experience and long-standing friendship with Defense Minister Kim Jong-hyun. By mid-November, Ro instructed Major General Moon Sang-ho, head of the Defense Intelligence Command, to provide a list of 15 people skilled in covert operations who would assist in a planned raid on the National Election Commission. Moon selected agents for the mission, quote, who were really good at North Korean operations, unquote. As the day of martial law approached, plans became more detailed. On December 1st, Ro met with Moon and two military intelligence colonels at a Rapiria fast food restaurant where they discussed operational plans supporting martial law. Despite Ro's civilian status, he gave the orders. Ro instructed the others to seize control of the election commission, quote, to secure evidence of election fraud, unquote. It was unconventional, to say the least, for a civilian to be in a military chain of command delivering orders. However, Ro's tight relationship with Defense Minister Kim Jong-hyun was well understood. Ro played upon that factor in promising future assistance in directing promotion opportunities to the two colonels if they cooperated. However, the instructions that Defense Minister Kim had issued to Moon beforehand carried more weight. Quote, make it known that Ro Sang-woon's orders are my orders, unquote. Again, Roh Samoon was deposed 6 years ago and for sexual assault, but he came back and he was the de facto architect and implementer of Yoon's martial law decree. Continuing. Several hours before Yoon declared martial law on December 3rd, a second meeting occurred at Loteria. This time, Koo Sam-ho, commander of the 2nd Armored Brigade, joined others in attendance. Under orders from Roh, Koo headed afterward to an intelligence command center in Zhongji province to join HIB agents on standby mode. Koo's apparent role was connected to his brigade being the closest Armored Unit 2, Seoul. Although no information on the nature of his orders has been revealed yet, it should be noted that on that same day, Defense Minister Kim remarked, quote, "The National Assembly is messing around with the defense budget, so let's smash it with tanks," unquote. There are well-founded suspicions that the conspirators anticipated that there would be large-scale demonstrations against martial law and that tanks were needed to put them down. The next section, martial law goes into effect. At about 10:25 p.m. on December 3rd, Yoon began his speech proclaiming martial law. Supplementing the speech, the martial law decree prohibited all political activities, strikes, and demonstrations. It also stipulated that all acts that deny or attempt to overthrow military rule, which the document perversely termed, quote, "the free democratic system," unquote, would not be allowed. All media would be placed under the control of the martial law command with the warning that violators may be arrested, detained, searched with a warrant, and punished. The decree was chillingly regiment of South Korea's previous experiences under martial law when people faced repression on a mass scale, imprisonment, torture, and executions. The South Korean Constitution provides for martial law based on two exigencies, military necessity or national emergency. Neither applied in this case, but Yoon calculated that violence could substitute for legality. According to one estimate, Yoon unleashed at least 4,200 riot police and more than 1,700 military personnel at a variety of locations as his insurrection unfolded. Another estimate puts the combined total at 4,749. Because the Constitution grants authority to the National Assembly to overturn martial law, it was Yoon's primary target. If Yoon could stop the National Assembly from reaching a quorum and taking a vote, then he could make martial law stick. As soon as the news was broadcast, outraged citizens by the thousands raced to the National Assembly to confront the army and police, buying enough time for arriving lawmakers to fight their way through the military blockade and gain entry to the building. One more time. As soon as the news of martial law was broadcast, outraged citizens by the thousands raced to the National Assembly to confront the army and police, buying enough time for arriving lawmakers to fight their way through the military blockade and gain entry to the building. Those inside the building erected barricades at the doors and used fire extinguishers to fend off soldiers who had entered through windows. Many of the soldiers deployed to the National Assembly were informed beforehand that they were being sent to the border area and instructed to write a will and have blood drawn. Helicopters transporting them to the scene deliberately adopted complex flight patterns to disorient the passengers as to their destination. However, as soon as they arrived, it was immediately apparent to the soldiers that they had been misled. Several soldiers resisted orders to drag legislators out of the building. One soldier pointed out that his unit comprised only 230 people and asked, quote, "So how could we possibly drag them out," unquote. The officer in charge responded by explaining, quote, "Dragging out means subduing them with guns, or special forces techniques to immobilize them and then dragging them out, unquote. Yoon's motives were both strategic and personal, and his animus drove him to instruct the deputy director of the National Intelligence Service to target several individuals that he particularly loathed, including Democratic Party leader Lee Jae-myung, National Assembly Speaker Woo Won-sik, and Han Dong-hoon, the leader of his ruling party. By the way, we spoke about the offense of assassinating someone who was, in effect, Yoon's vice president in our last program. Continuing. Take this opportunity to arrest them all, sort them all out, and give the National Intelligence Service the authority to conduct counterintelligence investigations, he urged. Additional orders went out to the counterintelligence arrest team to prioritize apprehending those three individuals and transferring them to a detention facility in Suwon using handcuffs and shackles. The personalization of Yoon's martial law took on such prominence that the Office of the Defense Counterintelligence Command's arrest team had a whiteboard listing the names of 14 people to be rounded up. As Yoon began to fear that his plan to blockade the National Assembly was starting to unravel, his compound became a beehive of activity. A flurry of calls went out demanding that martial law troops crush resistance. In one encrypted call to Special Warfare Commander Kwok, Yoon said he did not think the assembly had a quorum yet and ordered him to break down the doors, go in, and drag out the people inside. Colonel Kim Hyun-tae of the Special Warfare Command received a similar call from Yoon, who told him that, quote, there shouldn't be more than 150 lawmakers in the chamber, unquote. Defense Minister Kim Young-hyun made frantic calls along the same line, instructing Colonel Kim to go in and drag out assembly members before a quorum formed. He also ordered Kwok to order his soldiers to force their way in, firing blanks and tasers. Under pressure from Kwok, commanders at the scene discussed those orders and the option of shutting off power to the National Assembly, but many of them expressed doubts about the legality of those orders. Desperate for more forceful action, Yoon reached out to Lee Jin-woo, commander of the Capital Defense Command, pleading, quote, can't four people go in and take them out one by one, unquote? Yoon soon called again, quote, haven't you gone in yet? What are you doing? Break down the door with a gun and drag them out, unquote. Yoon badgered National Police Commissioner Cho Ji-ho 6 times that night, demanding, quote, Chief Cho, arrest all the lawmakers trying to enter the National Assembly. It's illegal. All the lawmakers are violating the proclamation. Arrest them, unquote. Meanwhile, as soon as Yoon proclaimed martial law, 10 Defense Intelligence Command soldiers entered the National Election Commission, or NEC headquarters, in Gwacheon. Around 2 hours later, 110 military personnel deployed around the building, only departing about 50 minutes after the National Assembly vote. An additional 130 troops headed to a position near the Commission's Election Training Center in Suwon. Martial law troops photographed wire connections to the servers and other details in preparation for reconnections and a planned removal of servers to a martial law-controlled installation. However, time went out when the National Assembly vote cut short that assignment. Zhang Sung-woo, chief of the Counterintelligence 1st Division, met with the military security officer, cybersecurity officer, director, one more time. Zhang Sung-woo, chief of the Counterintelligence 1st Division, met with the military security office director, cybersecurity office director, and scientific investigation office director to convey instructions from the head of counterintelligence, Yoo In-hyung. Quote, the prosecution and the National Intelligence Service will come to the Central Election Commission, unquote, he informed them, again quoting. The important tasks will be entrusted to the prosecution, and we will provide support afterward, unquote. These instructions strongly indicate that the Supreme Prosecutor's Office or well-placed officials within were complicit in the martial law conspiracy. The next section, after martial law fails, Yoon strives for a second martial law. At 1:01 a.m. on December 4th, having collected a quorum, the 190 assembly members who had successfully made their way inside voted unanimously to reject Yoon's martial law. As specified by South Korea's Martial Law Act, once the National Assembly votes to lift the martial law decree, the president must announce its termination, quote, without delay, unquote. Rather than follow that constitutional obligation, Yoon maintained 3.5 hours of public silence. Yoon's immediate reaction was to ignore the National Assembly's decision and forge ahead with plans to impose martial law. After the vote, Yoon called Commander Lee Jin-woo, telling him, quote, I can't even confirm that 190 people have come in. Even if it's lifted, I can declare martial law 2 or 3 times, so keep going, unquote. For the first 2 hours, the martial law command repeatedly contacted the Administrative Office of the Supreme Court, demanding that it send a court clerk to the command, presumably to act as a liaison officer. Through this arrangement, the military hoped to exert control over the judiciary. Doubting the legitimacy of martial law, the Supreme Court disregarded the command one more time. Doubting the legitimacy of martial law, the Supreme Court disregarded the demand. Half an hour after the National Assembly vote, Yoon summoned generals to meet with him in the martial law situation room at the Joint Chiefs of Staff. A bus transported 34 generals and high-ranking officers to Yoon's personal compound. Details of the meeting have not been made public. What is known is that not long after martial law was voted down, the martial law command ordered the 7th Airborne Brigade in North Jeolla Province and the 13th Airborne Brigade in North Changchun Province to go into standby mode and prepare to advance on Seoul and reinforce troops stationed there. The 11th Airborne Division in Jeollanam-do Province was also set to go, issuing bulletproof vests, helmets, and firearms to the unit and keeping vehicle engines running ready for immediate departure. Yoon also convened a Council of Ministers meeting in a Kakko Talk Group. Yoon also convened a Council of Ministers meeting in a Kakao Talk Group chat room, which may not have gone as he had hoped, as Yoon subsequently went on the air at around 4:30 a.m. to announce the lifting of martial law. It was only then that airborne troops were told to stand down. It is not publicly known what other factors may have contributed to Yoon's party decision to lift martial law. Yoon's plans for the first days of martial law. The martial law command had prepared multiple facilities to house prisoners. On one site, the B-1 bunker at the Capital Defense Command, located on the border between Seoul and Gwacheon, can hold up to 500 people. A second site, the Psychological Warfare Building in Seoul, is not far from the National Assembly, and it is here where prisoners were to be processed through the not-so-gentle hands of HID interrogators. These sites were intended to handle high-profile prisoners. It appears that ordinary civilians who were arrested would be directed into standard prisons. At 1:01 a.m. on December 4th, as the National Assembly voted down martial law, a nationwide request went out to prisons asking them to report on their capacity. Such a request would ordinarily only occur during regular working hours for prison staff, and the unusual timing is highly suggestive that the martial law operation included plans for immediate mass incarceration. Had Yoon prevailed, his troops stood poised to seize control of the Election Commission and its computer servers, which were to be examined for imagined evidence of electoral fraud. Remind you of anything? Democratic Party Assembly Kim Byung-joo received information from an inside source that intelligence agents, supplemented by HIB soldiers, planned to go to the National Election Commission headquarters, quote, overpower the department heads and 30 key staff members, bind their wrists and ankles with cable ties, cover their faces with masks, and bring them to the B1 bunker, unquote. Election computer servers, which would be transferred to the counterintelligence agency. A harsher fate than imprisonment awaited election officials after being abducted by the martial law arrest team. Specific equipment was needed to encourage the desired answers from the prisoners during interrogation about the, quote, false election, unquote, including awls, AWLS, nippers, hammers, and metal baseball bats. It is all too easy to imagine the kind of damage such implements could inflict upon human beings. However, there were those who liked the idea. In particular, Roe, R-O-H. At the December 1st Le Perrier meeting, he said he would personally interrogate the chairman of the National Election Commission. Quote, bring the baseball bat to my office, unquote, he ordered, adding that he can break anyone who, quote, doesn't talk properly, unquote. Roe also intended to compel the Election Commission website manager to post a, quote, confession of electoral fraud, unquote, on the NEC's website. A little more than 2 weeks before martial law, Roe was even more explicit about the interrogation methods that were to be employed against captured election officials. Quote, if we catch and pulverize all the people involved in the fraudulent election, everything that was fraudulent during the election will come out, unquote. Again, one more time. A little more than 2 weeks before martial law, Roe was even more explicit about the interrogation methods that were to be employed against captured election officials. Quote, if we catch and pulverize all the people involved in the fraudulent election, everything that was fraudulent during the election will come out, unquote. Martial law planners intended to arrest and imprison a great many people. Following the collapse of Yoon's insurrection, police raided the home of conspirator Roe, the central figure in drawing up implementation plans for martial law. They uncovered Roe's notebook, where he had jotted down meeting notes. He identified as, quote, targets for collection, unquote, and, quote, detention and handling, unquote, the names of politicians, journalists, labor unionists, religious figures, judges, and government workers. Shockingly, the notebook mentioned executions by gunshot. How many people were destined to be killed under martial law has not yet been revealed. We only know the intention Yoon personally, Shockingly, the notebook mentioned executions by gunshot. How many people were destined to be killed under martial law has not yet been revealed. We only know the intention. Yoon personally supervised operations to arrest those whom he especially detested. High on his list was Speaker of the Assembly Wu Won-sik. 40 minutes after martial law was voted down, several soldiers and two plainclothesmen arrived at Wu's home, evidently waiting for his arrival so that they could seize him. However, like most lawmakers, Wu stayed overnight at the National Assembly to defend against any further attack by Yoon's forces. Wu thereby evaded capture, and the soldiers waiting to pounce on Wu only departed 3 hours later once Yoon announced the end of martial law. The next section is called Cover-Up. Efforts at cover-up began immediately after the cancellation of martial law. When soldiers returned to camp after the confrontation at the National Assembly, their mobile phones were confiscated and they were forbidden to leave the base, an order that was not rescinded until December 17th, 3 days after Yoon was impeached. The intent was to cut off communication with the outside world and prevent soldiers from appearing as witnesses before investigators. Only the commanders were exempted from this order. It is also reported that lower-level personnel in the Capital Defense Command and Special Forces face similar restrictions. Lim Tai-hoon, director of the Military Human Rights Center noted, quote, attempts to destroy evidence and conceal the truth are being openly carried out everywhere. As long as Yoon Suk-yeol, the mastermind behind the insurrection, is not arrested and detained, attempts to destroy evidence by those involved in the insurrection will not cease, unquote. After martial law came to an end, several conspirators gathered at Yoon's residence to coordinate their stories to the public. Afterward, all the participants changed their mobile phones in an apparent attempt to cover their tracks. For his part, Yoon repeatedly employed belaying tactics such as instructing his security service to block police from searching his home and repeatedly ignoring summons to appear before investigators. More about that security service later on. There is reason to suspect that the insurrection had more widespread roots than initially thought. Back on September 4th, Democratic Party Assemblyman Yang Moon-suk raised concerns that 130 generals had made or started to make deletions to NamuWiki, a Korean information website, over a short span of time. At his September press conference, Yang expressed fears about what he thought this may have portended. Quote, I have strong suspicions that Yoon Suk-yeol government and the military are preparing for a state of emergency such as martial law aimed at war or large-scale military deployment. Again, at his September press conference, Yang expressed fears about what he thought this may have portended. Quote, I have strong suspicions that the Yoon Suk-yeol government and the military are preparing for a state of emergency such as martial law aimed at war or large-scale military deployment, unquote. That fear, it turned out, was well-placed, and if there is indeed a connection with the mass deletions from NamuWiki, then investigators have yet to uncover the full extent of the rot at the heart of the military. The first person to believe information was Commander of the Defense Counterintelligence Command, Yeo In-hyung, who played a pivotal role in the martial law plot. Others known to have been involved in the insurrection also made deletions, but the connection has not yet been established for the others. It may be that the general's motivation was to remove public information that could tie them to other conspirators. At a meeting of the National Assembly Steering Committee on December 19th, Yang once again raised suspicions about the incident, calling for an investigation and suggesting that the fact that generals, quote, deleted their information on NamuWiki is highly likely to indicate that they are hidden collaborators in the insurrection, unquote. And the next section, military emergency as justification for military rule. On December 3rd, the day of martial law approached, the Yoon administration sought to establish a legal framework for military rule that the National Assembly could not reverse. Military necessity was one option. All one had to do was to create a conflict with North Korea, and then no one could stop martial law. Astonishingly, the conspirators imagined that they could fine-tune the level of North Korea's response just enough to manufacture a conflict while sacrificing some South Korean lives along the way, but without plunging the peninsula into a far more serious war. However, always in the conflict, the other side makes its calculations, and it is a delusion to believe that those can be externally guided. Those South Korean citizens who may have lost their lives in the process were not a factor for consideration. In one of the efforts to stir up trouble, South Korea sent drones over Pyongyang in October, releasing propaganda leaflets. Based on reports provided to Democratic Party investigators, it was the Office of National Security that ordered Drone Command to launch the cross-border drones, bypassing the Ministry of National Defense and Joint Chiefs of Staff. However, the military produced and supplied the propaganda leaflets to be dropped. Hoping for a response from the North Koreans, the Joint Chiefs of Staff announced, quote, in the event of a drone infiltration, we will respond accordingly and take due measures, unquote. However, the South Korean military reaped only disappointment as North Korea failed to take the bait, denying the South of an opportunity for disproportionate retaliation. A more surefire approach was needed. Will Sang-wan's notebook documented a more reckless concept. The northern limit line is a highly disputed maritime boundary off the western coast that had been drawn without North Korean participation, angling sharply northwards to hand over to South Korea a few islands that, in normal practice, would have belonged to the North. If one wanted to provoke a conflict, this would be a promising location to do so. In his notebook, Rowe had written down the phrase, quote, inducing a North Korean attack around the Northern Limit Line, or NLL, unquote. First, the scene had to be set, and on June 3, 2024, the South Korean military nullified its September 19, 2018 agreement with North Korea that had, among other things, bound both sides to, quote, cease all live fire and maritime maneuvers, unquote, off the West Coast. Later that month, the South Korean Marine Corps on the western islands of Yeongpyang and Byeongdo fired nearly 300 rocket, missile, and howitzer rounds. When that failed to elicit the desired reaction from the North, additional large-scale firing drills were conducted in September and November. One South Korean official commented, quote, we thought this should have been enough to trigger a response from the North Korean military, but there was no reaction, and there was no sign of any provocation, unquote. There was a discernible tone of disappointment in that statement. Another contentious issue in inter-Korean relations that held potential was related to the decades-old... One more time. Another contentious issue in inter-Korean relations that held potential was related to the decades-long practice of right-wing groups in South Korea sending balloons across the border to dump propaganda materials. Tons upon tons of material repeatedly strewn across the landscape forced North Korea to expend enormous time and money in cleanup efforts. For years, the North Koreans limited themselves to complaints about the practice, generally to no avail. Finally, in May of 2024, the exasperated North Koreans decided to give their neighbors in the South a taste of their own medicine. Over a period of several months, a series of trash-dumping balloons were sent across the border, imposing on the South Koreans their own need for extensive cleanup operations. And we'll continue with reading this article, overlapping it with what I just read in our next program. Again, note the parallels between what has been going on in Korea and what Donald Trump has Team Trump has been saying about the elections. And note the continuity between the tactic of labeling all opposition as, quote, communist, unquote, goes all the way back to the Japanese occupation of Korea. And note how Yoon's behavior falls right in line with the influence, the Japanese influence that we spoke about in For the Record program 1369. And again, the Golden Lily dynamic looms large in this. We'll continue with discussion of this in our next program. Please do get the new 64-gigabyte flashlight with flash drive, with all of my life's work on it. I get no money whatsoever from this. This also includes a mini-library of old anti-fascist books. This concludes For the Record program number 1371, Korea on Our Minds, Part 4. This is being recorded on February 1st of 2025. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.